Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What are you doing, Wagner?
Indeed, what are you doing? Our look at what people are doing. It started during the pandemic, continues during this pandemic, and the chance to look at other stuff, other things. Some happy, some sad, some interesting. Hopefully they're all interesting for you. Steve Rosenblum and Mark Rohde with you. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, Saturday suckage. We suck so you don't have to. Here's something that sucks for the Wake and Bake Club, Mark. This is...
Yeah, do tell.
Marking the passing of Cliff Robinson. He died at age 53 today. He had had a stroke several years ago and been dogged by that. Now, he had played for Portland. Of course, he was a Blazer. He was busted 3 times for testing positive for taking pot. And he always believed in it as a relief of pain and anxiety. And he was known as Uncle Cliffy. He was ahead of his time as a guy 6'10". This is according from Jonah Bronstein of AP in Buffalo. The first player 6'10 or taller to make 100 or more three-pointers in a season. He's the first to do it 4 times before 2004. And now we've seen how much the game has changed. 22 players have done it over the past 4 seasons. So he was doing all this. He was known as Uncle Cliffy. Then he got out of basketball after 18 seasons, and he became known as Uncle Spliffy, because Uncle Spliffy was all about cannabis.
Yeah.
He made cannabis products in Oregon. He ran cannabis places, and he talked about doing it for the right reasons of just, it helped the anxiety, it relieved his headaches, and he became an advocate for marijuana legalization. We had often tried to book him for the Wake and Bake Club, and it never seemed to work out, but we couldn't let go the passing of Uncle Spliffy, as was noted today. His former UConn star died at 53. So
I'm glad, though.
Wake and Bake Club legend.
Yeah, amen. Yeah. R.I.P. I'm glad, though, that Cliff Robinson, Uncle Spliffy, got to see the day that, in essence, weed was legal in the NBA because they ain't tested in that their bubble. In other words...
You're right. You're right. Yeah.
So he got to see... I'm glad we're not sitting here and saying, oh, if he only got to see the day that you don't get busted in the NBA for smoking weed, and that, in essence, everybody's looking the other way right now, and they are not testing in the bubble. If you brought weed to the bubble, they are saying, we're not watching. Adam Silver's like, I don't want to see it necessarily, but we're not going to test you. Smoke up, Johnny.
Yeah, smoke up, Joakim. By the way, this is outing myself as just how stupid I can be. I'm not. I was so little experience at this, but so much support for its legalization and regulation and everything that goes along with that. That I had seen something on the Twitter machine of Joakim Noah walking down the hallway of the Bubble Hotel with smoke emanating from what looked like the world's largest blunt, and it looked like a bunch of joints wrapped together and corralled with a rubber band or some form of something to contain it, wrap it together. It looked like the biggest joint in the world, which sounds perfect for Joakim Noah. So I sent a picture of it to my son, who I knew would help me out with this. And I said, what do they call this thing? What is this? And Brandon sends me an email back. He goes, LOL, that's sage, not marijuana. So he was going from door to door saging as part of the using sage, burning sage as part of the meditative process. I'm looking at the thing going, God, he's wrapped like, those look like 10 joints wrapped together. That's a really Joakim Noah thing. And I have no idea what I'm talking about.
You're thinking it's like, do you remember the picture when there used to be the Guinness Book of World Records hardcover books of the guy or lady, I can't remember if it was a man or a woman, that had like 100 cigarettes in his mouth?
I do not remember that. But that would be it. That would look, that's what this reminded me of. That's a general idea. Yeah, you're going to light all that with a blowtorch. By the way, Uncle Cliffy, Cliff Robinson, opened his line of Uncle Cliffy cannabis stores or his products at a store called Oregon's Finest, which was on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. And he was there, of course, at 420, and he was selling pre-rolls. Anyways, that's one of our guys. So I had no idea as we passed this week, we passed on Tuesday, the anniversary of the release of one of the greatest albums of all time, that I had no idea it was one of the greatest desperation albums of all time, Born to Run. Hmm. Born to Run was released 1975. This week, and it was an instance where Columbia was giving Bruce all the money it could think of, all the money it could find, whatever it could get, because it was a last-ditch effort at making him commercially viable. And that's what the whole thing was about. And he was frustrated, and it's like a 14-month process to get this album out, as trying to be, you know, Bob Dylan meets Phil Spector in the Wall of Sound, and he couldn't really translate what he wanted to do. And Columbia said, there's something in here, we know it is. They threw as much money as they could at him, at this production, to try to get him, as silly as it sounds now, commercially viable. It was his third album, and they said, this is it. This is going to be our last chance. I had no idea that was part of the backstory of Born to Run.
I didn't know either until this. No, not until this second, man. I had no idea. I mean, as far like in my lifetime, he was always commercially viable. And obviously, he was an MTV darling when I was a youngster in the 80s with some of those songs as well. So, yeah, I always looked at him that way. And I think, you'd have to probably give if I think about it more deeply now, I would probably give a nod to MTV, because there are certain guys, certain artists and groups that to this day are just because of the popularity of MTV.
Yeah. And the cover art is legendary as well, as there were something like 900 photos taken and it was a three-hour tour. So anyways, Bruce is leaning against Clarence Clemons and that's the image that became the cover art, because that's the one that jumped out at everybody. And then it was much copied, including maybe the most famous one from a lot of people's childhood. I don't know if you remember this, but it was copied as Bert as Springsteen and the Cookie Monster as Clarence Clemens. And it was the cover of the Bruce Stringbean and the S Street Band singing Born to Add. And they mirrored that cover. I don't know if you remember seeing it, but that was the Sesame Street version among the many people who copied the cover of Born to Run.
I don't remember that, but I'll take your word for it. And Bruce Springsteen has always been a guy who has fit in a specific category with me. I have never been a big fan of Bruce Springsteen, but I completely respect him and understand his popularity. You know what I mean? Like, I would, if somebody had a ticket for me to go see Bruce Springsteen that I had to pay for, I would totally go see him. I've just, for whatever reason, his music has never really touched me or gotten to me, but he's a fantastically talented artist and performer.
It's an unbelievable concert. It just goes on and on and on. And having seen him one January night a couple years ago, I think the show still might be going on. That's just remarkable what he does, the energy that he has and the energy that he gives to the audience, and the hit after hit and recognizable piece after recognizable piece.
Yeah. I respect him immensely. Yeah.
So good news. This is all really bad news. Because I don't really care who owns the Mets, but it won't be J-Lo and A-Rod. A-Rod was trying to put together a bid from a lot of different people with money. Like, okay, you got a buck, you got a buck, you got a buck. And he's also the guy who will always, well, not always, but right now holds the longest PED suspension in Major League Baseball. And he was trying to become part of the group that bought the Mets. And apparently, and he is now ceded that spot to somebody else who will negotiate with the Mets and cut a deal with them. So what that means is one of the worst possible circumstances, that Alex Rodriguez will be back in the ESPN booth annoying us during baseball games whenever ESPN does them. He's just awful, and he's going to be back because he can't buy the Mets.
I agree with you that he says awful things, but there's something let me put it this way. I would rather have him in the booth than not. I know that sounds awful, but I think in part because of the wacky things he says, there's something conflictingly comforting about having him in the booth, and I'm having a hard time expressing it. But
Roger Bozart.
Yeah, Roger Bozart and the whole salsa thing. You gotta do better than that. You have to explain why you want him in the booth. There's nobody who would ever agree with you. Nobody.
I think in part, look, there is content there. Look, we have spent lots, and I'll stop saying look eventually. There is content there that we have used at the Score. I mean, there's been hours of content and time used on Alex Rodriguez, and that would mean that it's good stuff, or we wouldn't talk about it on the Score. So really, everybody wants him, and nobody's going to admit it but me.
A bit like old John Stockton. He just does everything really well, and he's a winner.
I mean, aren't we all always looking for guys who are not cookie cutters, who are just a little bit different, a little bit wacky, a little bit crazy, because there's so many guys that are exactly the same these days. He ain't the same as everybody else. And there's some things that we're going to have to concede or just got to let go when he says Roger Bozart and he says ridiculous things, but we're talking about it the next day. And like, we allowed for Harry Carey to be like that. We allowed for Dandy Don Meredith to be weird, and we've allowed a lot of things to get through our broadcast days and our games. Why can't we allow A-Rod to be this kind of freak in the booth as well, that we could all rally around and talk about and laugh at and feel better about ourselves, quite frankly, when we hear him doing bad things?
Close. And here's why we cannot tolerate him is, like everything about him, it seems like just an act. like he was his well-earned nickname, A-Fraud. But it seems like it's not organic. Harry Carey was organically drunk. What you heard was real. That was him. So Dandy Don was that way. Dandy Don Meredith was back in the early days. He was as real as Cosell. And that's what they were. They were organic, and that's the best kind of broadcast, and it was real. I don't know if you remember this. One of the best basketball announcing booths I ever heard was Kevin Harlan on play-by-play, and his analysts were Danny Ainge and John Thompson. Now, the nothing was contrived. They were especially with Ainge and going back and forth with John Thompson, it was a raucous thing. I don't think anything with when you listen to Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith, I don't think it's contrived. It's real what they do, the way they talk with him and Ernie Johnson. And I just think the difference of that is A-Rod is unprepared, doesn't know how to pronounce guys' names. He just doesn't seem to have the right information, and he's too worried about looking. It's not how you talk, it's how you look, and you look marvelous. He's just too much primping and acting, and he's the kind of guy who broadcasts as if he's looking at a mirror.
Why do you think they keep him around? Why do you think they keep him around then?
I have no idea. Maybe there are idiot focus groups that say they want to hear from him. I don't know who they're polling. I don't know what his Q rating probably shows high recognizability. His broadcasting shows a high insufferability. So I don't know what they're looking at. But the other guys you mentioned, I was going to bring up John Smoltz. John Smoltz is compelling because he's telling you baseball in baseball ways.
You're right. I love Smoltz. I do. I love Smoltz. And then in that same vein as Steve Stone, just straight up learn the game. A-Rod is a completely different type of guy, a completely different type of entertainment in which maybe you have to suspend reality to get past the fraud part. A couple of very dark text messages coming my way.
a memoir.
Yeah, check it out here. Grody doesn't like the boss, but likes A-Rod. What's next, a birthday cake for Bin Laden? Whoa,
yeah.
Too much, man.
Wow.
Too far. That's a gun at a knife fight if I've ever heard it. And then from the 847, this one's a little bit more gentle. You lost me on A-Rod the cheat, Grody. I have other things to do. Stay safe, guys. Time to spark a strawberry 37% the cop pre-roll.
Weed is legal.
So, smoke weed, man, those are some dark-ass text messages coming my way. I did not think that my take on A-Rod was going to be the thing to spark this controversy, but there it is.
Yeah, well, he's just the other – everybody – almost everybody you look around that you want to hear a game – you do a game from, you have or hear from during a game – And that would go for Jim DeShays and, as you mentioned, Steve Stone. It's that you're dealing with a certain organic and a real point of view. This is not an act. It's not all made up. You're not playing a role. A-Rod always seems like he's playing a role, and that's not what you get. Steve Stone is just he's there. He's a guy who loves baseball. And he's going to tell you what he thinks. He's going to show you his prescience, and he's going to give you his impressions afterwards. And Jim DeShays is going to be got a great sense of humor. He works well with his partner. You don't think for a minute he's playing a role or there's an act there, right?
Well, national broadcasts, I think, are forever in search of finding somebody who the common person watching sports might enjoy, or somebody who's not a diehard baseball fan, but oh, hey, there's the guy that's married to J-Lo and he's been controversial and he's good looking and now check it out. He says things that I can understand. So I feel like network broadcasts have forever been in search of that guy. And maybe that's what he's giving you because it is. I cannot argue with you. You're right. It does sound fake and contrived, But there's something about that to me that is a little bit endearing because he's trying to entertain us. He is trying to say things and act like somebody who is trying to get through to us in a different way than other guys. So it doesn't mean that I don't like the other guys. Like Smoltz, if I had to make my list of top analysts, he'd probably be in my top five. There's no doubt about it in terms of the information that he gives. But I might have A-Rod up in there as well. And you mentioned Jim DeShays. I'm glad we're having this conversation. Jim DeShays, he is very subtle, and sometimes I'm like, where are you, Jim? But Jim DeShays is one of the only guys doing color commentating that occasionally has the ability to make me laugh out loud. Like, he will just sometimes he'll just throw little bombs in there. And because I don't think there's anybody else doing it that is actually, like, I think DeShays at his core is actually a genuinely funny guy. And sometimes that comes out, and I don't think it happens. There's nobody else. Stone's not funny, and you don't have to be funny. Smoltz is certainly not funny. I can't think of anybody. I can't think of anybody who is able to analyze and then make you laugh out loud as well. Like I said, sometimes I'm like, where are you, Jim? Let's go. But he's funny.
He is. And one of the things, he was that way as a player, too. He was a go-to, quote, as a player. And back in the old days, I'll throw another log on the fire as I tell you this story. But back in the day, when we had newspapers and Sunday newspapers weighed about 7 pounds, what was included in there, whether it was from Peter Gammons, who perfected it and he'd write 2,000 words on baseball, but everybody had a Sunday Notes column. And you knew the Sunday Notes column, you had the right guy in the right network. What we'd do as writers is we'd have a clearinghouse where we'd trade notes. We'd upload them to a particular point, and everybody could then download everybody else's stuff and use them for your own purposes. And this part of this note sharing was the way a lot of these Sunday Notes columns got done in the newspaper, and that's how you ended up with 1,000 words, a full broadsheet page, whatever it was. That's the way it was done. And you knew you needed to have, whether it was the Houston guy or the St. Louis guy, or somewhere you needed to be part of Jason Stark's network because he always seemed to be tapped into Jim DeShays. You needed to be able to have access to the Jim DeShays quotes when he was a player. You needed to be part of that network because it made your notes piece better.
Oh, that's awesome, man. And I can tell you, the way he is on TV is he has perfected being himself. Like, he is like that off there. Uh-huh. He is subtle. He doesn't try to force his way into the headlines. He is the guy that, like, we always talk about, and we talk about this in sports talk radio a lot. Like, you just want it to be like a couple guys sitting around a bar and talking about a game. If you listen to Jim DeShays and watch the broadcast with Len Casper, he really does subscribe to that theory of the dude at a bar watching a game, and he actually does it. Because I don't know that I've ever actually heard anybody perfect that. Like, we all say it, we all think it sounds great, but we're all about what's the next topic, here's a tease, and, you know, we try to do that, but I don't think any of us really succeed. Jim DeShays kind of does. So pay attention to that if you happen to be watching the game, that Jim DeShays, the guy at the bar, talking about it and giving knowledge, and then has the ability to, unlike, I can't think of anybody going right now in any sport that has the ability to make me laugh out loud as a broadcaster.
And that, Jim DeShays is the perfect Sundance kid. His shots are perfect, and he's just, he knows when to pull the trigger, and he's terrific.
Yes.
when he does analysis. So, all right, we take a break. We went long on this, and I've had this picture on my computer for the last hour. I would call your attention to Jack Flaherty's Twitter account.
Yeah.
He, somewhere on his Twitter account, he has tweeted out pictures of his Wakanda Black Panther cleats. They are a gorgeous purple. They are a thing to see, made by Nike. I have no idea how old or new they are. I have no idea if he's probably risking a fine to use them. They are one of the greatest looking pieces of footwear I have ever seen. The tribute to the late Chad Bozeman, who played the Black Panther. So now that we're talking about things like that, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're actually going to talk to Trash Panda, who's supposed to be our producer, but he's supposed to be on the show, but he's not on the show. He's on Jim DeShays' show, actually, when you think about it. And now he's going to be on this show because he's got some tweets I want to talk to him about and some things he did in college. So we're going to take a break and do that. We are Saturday Suckage. This is What Are You Doing, Wagner? And we're going to do our thing with Trash Panda next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I'm really enjoying this.
That is a fun factoid.
How are you doing, Wagner?
That's what we're doing. We have had sparse Trash Panda news recently, although we did have Nancy Armour, and we related that she had purchased the Rocket City Trash Panda. She found a t-shirt and the says 2020 trash with the flying raccoon with a trash can lid on its head and a ferocious look on its face flying through space. But the real Trash Panda, the original Trash Panda, has not been producing our show. He has been dodging us, but he can't dodge us very long. And here then is our Trash Panda to answer for some things. Adam Studzinski.
Hey, what's up,
Trash
guys?
Trash Panda, how are you?
Oh, my God. It's so good to hear your voice.
You're
Although
so
I've been listening.
You're as big a fraud as A-Rod is. Jeez.
You know, I'm back next week, guys, so don't worry. You're going to have your... I don't know if you want me back, but I'm back with you guys as of next week.
Well, we're looking forward to that. So I wanted to say, ask first of all, because we recounted all the mother stuff. How's Alice doing?
She's good. I think she's a little bored. I mean, there's not a whole lot to do in the middle of nowhere, especially when you can't really, because, you know, my folks are not young, so they try to stay away from as many people as they can during the pandemic. So I think my mom's bored, but they're doing well. They're doing well.
I would have thought that handling Shooter would have been a full-time job.
Oh, it is. It is. Trust me. It is. Handling my dad's a full-time job sometimes.
Okay. So anyways, Mark, I don't know if you saw this, but there was this tweet from Ian Rose, whose Twitter bio says this person is the night mayor of Minneapolis. In honor of our university's relying on the flawless decision-making of 30,000 undergraduates in order to open, please quote tweet this with the dumbest decision you witnessed in college. So, Mark, our beloved Trash Panda, Alice, hope you're listening.
She probably knows.
LOL,
this.
I can't even name the top one. Ooh. Maybe the roughly 6 keg races we did, or when we played bags on the roof while drinking, or, and this is where we're going to start, 90% of what happened at Scumfest.
Oh, yes. What a party that was.
Explain, Trash Panda. Well, I guess it's fitting that Trash Panda would be at Scumfest, but
so
what it was.
Oh, my. I'm so glad I get to talk about this now. So Scumfest was a party that we had every semester in college, starting with, I wasn't actually at the first one. It was second semester freshman year the first one happened. And basically, it was just too many people drinking in a dorm room, is what I was told. And
I never
someone,
thought that
and
was
so,
possible,
like,
but
yeah.
Okay.
And so the next day, I guess one of the guys is like, man, that was a real Scumfest last night. And so that's where the name came from. And so we started doing this every semester. We would go to our sophomore year was at my friend's place. And then my last 2 years of college was at our house. And it was just a party, but it was, you know, you start drinking in pretty early in the day, and it's just the party just kind of goes from there. And so things didn't really get out of control, but it just wasn't. There was a lot of, I mean, for instance, at one point we got a keg to tap during the Bulls game. The Bulls were good, and in the playoffs, it was the Derrick Rose MVP year, so everyone wanted to watch the game. And we finished the keg by like 4 in the afternoon. Just kept going from there. So
how could stupid stuff not follow?
Exactly. So, and, you
well,
know, I don't know if you guys have ever played beer darts. Beer darts was played.
No, explain, Lucy.
Oh my. So beer darts is you basically take a dart, like a that you would use like at a bar, you know, to play darts, like one of those darts.
We know what a dart is.
I was making sure to clarify. It's not a lawn dart. We're not. I was making sure that you're.
No, it's not a jart. Yes. It's not a jart.
Yes.
And it's not a euphemism for a cigarette.
Yes.
Which
it's
dart
an
is.
Actual like
it's a dart. Okay,
and so,
dude.
And you stand in a big circle with, I don't know, probably sometimes up to 10 people. And you stand probably like 4 or 5 apart, 4 or 5 feet apart from everyone in the circle. And you toss your dart. There's two darts. And you everyone puts their beer down in front of them, kind of probably too close to their feet sometimes. And you throw the dart and you're trying to aim at the person's beer. And so
it was just on the floor.
Yeah, you play in the yard. We weren't playing inside. So you were playing in the yard, and you're trying to hit the...
Don't talk to me dismissively like we were playing. We would never play this inside this dumbass game where you're going to... Everybody's eventually going to throw darts at people's feet.
Well, you're not throwing at the higher. Feet. You're aiming for the beer can.
I know, but you're happy to miss and hit somebody's foot.
I don't think anyone's...
And draw someone, blood.
I think maybe one time someone's foot got hurt. Or got hit.
That's such crap.
I can't really remember for sure. We played that game a lot. So
hilarious. Hilarious. By the way, hilarious. Quick, real time review of the story so far from 708. That's great story. No one ever partied in college.
I didn't think it was anything super special. Although I will say that Scumfest had a pretty good reputation around campus. Like word got around. And so at Western, if you get known well for a party, that means that you're doing something right, because it was a hell of a party college when I was there.
All right, so let's move on to the Mayo on the Wall.
Oh, Mayo Mayhem?
Mayo Mayhem coming up on coming up on True TV.
That was freshman year. I didn't actually like. So. I guess what happened freshman year on our floor in our dorm room, and for some reason I don't even know how this happened, but one of my friends had several drinks, and somehow he had a jar of mayo and he just like threw a bunch of it on the wall, and rather than cleaning it up, because we're all idiot college kids, we just put a poster over it and moved on with our lives. And the hallways smelled so bad for the rest of the year. Like, it never got cleaned up. It just you had to hold your breath in the hallway. It was so bad. Yeah, it was.
Mayo Mayhem.
Mayo Mayhem. It's
infamous. That's Guy Fieri's new show, Mayo Mayhem. That's what's coming up next on the Food Channel.
To this day, if you bring that up to one of my friends, you just say the words Mayo Mayhem. They'll be like, oh, God, that was not good.
All right. Do you think Alice was listening? I just want to make sure.
She knows most of these. She knows what I did in college.
Okay. There you go. All right, Trash Panda. So you'll be working the Cubs game. You'll be working the board on the Cubs game. And then why are you sentenced to come back with us next week and not doing more Cubs stuff?
I don't know. Oh, I think it's because we made a couple hires. We made a couple hires. And so Rick Camp is back, and he'll be doing the Cubs game on Saturday.
Campy.
Go us. Score's a better place with Rick Camp around. Good. Okay. Well, we'll look forward to having you, Evan, an open mic much closer, much more often, Trash Panda. We appreciate you joining
here.
Us.
I'll be right, here. Anytime, fellas.
All right.
We'll take a break.
When we come back. There's something that happened in baseball last night that had never happened in the expansion era. It's quite a thing.
The White Sox are trailing 1-0 as Dylan Cease has given up a home run to Alex Gordon. Something tells me the White Sox will come back, though.
That's what they do. The 2018 White Sox just are losing early. The 2020 White Sox find a way to come back and go, take that. So there, neener, neener, neener. How do you dig me now? Anyways,
one run is like whatever, you know?
It's in a one at bat. We saw that last night. It's one at bat. So anyway, something that had not happened in baseball since the start of the expansion era in 1961 did happen yesterday. And also a former Cub kind of has the most common sense, puts it in different words. Everybody said it. Kind of puts it in, you want to understand what I'm going through? just ask kind of thing. So we'll hear from that. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde with you, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde with you. Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. We will be taking you up to Zach Zabeman's pregame show. The Cubs will play the Reds today at 3:10. The Zach Zabeman pregame show begins at 2:10. We'll take you up to that. We will build a bridge to Zach Zabeman, and somebody ought to, damn it. And this is... this is Yu Darvish's chance to establish himself here. I'm your stopper. Watch this. They need him to be Yu Darvish. He's going up against Trevor Bauer today. The Reds, you know, the Reds stopper, the Reds guy, or the other guy who's most likely to be the Cy Young candidate going up against Darvish. That's what you got today, two Cy Young candidates. But before that, something happened yesterday, Mark. I don't know if you saw it or its significance. And it was the Cardinals game, Cardinals-Indians game. Runners on first and third, none out. The Indians are already up 4-0. So Paul Goldschmidt fields a ground ball at first, and he throws home. Yadier Molina ran the runner back to third. But by then, the runner from first was nearly at third. Now, we've seen this, right? Suddenly, this starts to look like Little League, right? It looks, starts looking like Little League. So, Molina tagged the first runner, one out. Then he runs the second runner back to second while the batter was nearly at second base, giving the Indians their second instance of a chance where they nearly had two men on the same base on the same batted ball. So the hitter runs back to first, and the runner on second tries to head to third. And as Molina looks at the hitter who's scurrying back to first, Molina then throws to second base to get the runner out at when he was caught off second base. The man he threw it to was Dylan Carson, who is the center fielder.
Oh, Jesus.
So this became... Right as Carlson applies the tag, this was the first recorded instance of a 3-2-8 double play in the expansion era. This according to Elias Sports. 3-2-8 double play. And the Cardinals, of course, rode this momentum of a heads-up defensive play to immediately give up a homer to the next batter to go down 6-0 en route to a 14-2 loss.
Wow. So, and just when I thought the White Sox had the greatest rundown escapade of the evening, it was completely upped by
well, they, but they
what
did
you
it right. The Cardinals did it right. The Indians kind of ran the bases like the Cubs would, and the Cardinals actually played it right. They got two outs out of it. But they immediately gave up a two-run homer, and boom, there you go. Now what are you doing? And now we're down 6-0 and like that. But a 3-2-8 double play. Now
that's amazing. Happens. Well, and the important part is that the Cardinals are back to a game under 500. And as we speak, trailing the Indians 1-0 in the top of the sixth inning. So no matter how bad the Cubs have sucked lately, they're still going to be a playoff team. The top two teams in the division go to the playoffs. And right now, if you look at it, the Cubs are 18-13, the only team in the division above 500. Milwaukee 14-17. Those Reds, who the Cubs played two against today and lost to yesterday, 14-17. And Pittsburgh 9-20. So the Cubs are going to the playoffs. It's just a matter of what kind of damage they do once the postseason hits. If they don't go to the playoffs, it would be a fantastic collapse for the Cubs, quite frankly.
So let me ask you that, because it would be a fantastic collapse, and they talked about their own version of Last Dance. What? And with the pandemic stripping every team of any excess money and any kind of allowance that they could fudge, what do you expect Theo to do at the trading deadline Monday?
Well, you know, they Maben's name has come up and the speed guy, I think that's probably about all they will do. I think that it's such a strange position because before this year started, the Theo Epstein plan was probably to start to break things up and to trade somebody from the core and start a mini rebuild and maybe not necessarily win this year. That was if there was going to be a 162-game season. Everything changed. I don't need to detail that. So that said, so now he's in this spot, and it's got to be a really confusing spot for him where, yeah, the Cubs can do damage in the postseason. It is possible the Cubs could get to a World Series. It's probably not realistic to think that they will, but if you're Theo Epstein, do you begin that rebuild for the future now, or do you just kind of stand pat where you are? Maybe you get to the World Series, you probably don't, and then in the offseason you continue on with the plans that you had had, thinking it was going to be a 162-game season where we start to open up the Chris Bryant trade talks again, or somebody from that core. So I don't know what Theo Epstein is thinking. I imagine it's a pretty confusing spot to be in, and probably pretty convenient for him right now, or anybody in the Cubs organization, to say they don't have the money to make a big splashy move, because maybe they deep down inside they don't want to, because they don't think that this team is capable of winning the World Series.
Well, I don't know that you'd ever have a better chance. You know, you're in first place and you're surviving a 5-10 stretch and you're still in first place. Now, you're not a good team. You might be a good team. You're not playing like a good team. You're in a position, though, to survive that. You can weather it. And, yeah, I think it tells you how important Chris Bryant is. Much of this crap has come with Chris Bryant out. And he's important. And I don't see them going near, unless they get some unbelievable offer. I don't see them ever going, this year, by Monday, going near the idea of trading any core member. I get the feeling is, because like you said, the shortened season, everything changed. We've come this far with this group, so we'll give another 25 games and see where we are and see what the hell we even have next season, if there's a season, kind of thing. There's no reason not to. I wish, given all the money that we know the Ricketts have, you don't have to stay within a baseball budget. You are allowed to spend whatever money you want, I guess, how much tax you want to pay, and see what might be out there. The problem is trying to identify what you really, they always need bullpen help. Every team, I don't care who you are, needs bullpen help. So would you get a bat or would you get an arm? What would you do?
An arm, man. There's no doubt in my mind that you get an arm because, and this is with an eye on the future, you're probably right. They have to look at the season as every year is sacred. They're going to be in the dance. You have to go for it, and you shouldn't do anything drastic. However, I wouldn't be mad at them if they did, because next year, John Lester's probably not going to be around. Tyler Chatwood is probably not going to be around. He's a free agent, and suddenly he's struggling and looking like 2018
Tyler Chatwood.
And I prefer to think that he is what he was at the beginning of this year when he was really good. Let's be honest. He was excellent to start this year and has had two bad starts after coming off of an injury, and who knows if he's still hurt. So you have to kind of go at this from next year. You're going to be without damn John Lester, without Tyler Chatwood. At this point, if you could trade Wilson Contreras or Chris, name your core guy, for a number two worthy starting pitcher, you might have to consider doing that, because these are the kinds of things that I think Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer were thinking about doing anyway, to break up the core, to have a different mindset on your team, because they realized that they kind of had hit the wall with this core. They won the World Series. It's been great. It's been a huge success, but now it's time for something different. So I don't hesitate in saying it's got to be pitching, man.
Okay, they're not getting enough consistent offense either, and then you see Tommy La Stella being traded from the Angels to the A's, and he's a reliable bat, and he's not there, and you've seen him trade away some reliable bats, and they need that kind of hitting. I don't know. I assume that because the core players, like you said, the core players are their lineup, and adding to the arms. I don't know what they'd be willing to pay for him. We asked the same kind of question. What would you want to pay? What would you be willing to pay? What would you be willing to give up? What's right if you're the White Sox to get an arm? And the same questions apply to the Cubs. What would you be willing? Would you be willing to give up Wilson Contreras?
It's a tough one. I mean, for the right pitcher, the answer is yes.
Who's the right pitcher?
I mean, and I don't like it. I don't like saying that, but yeah, he's there. He's not, to me, he's not what you call an untouchable. As good as Wilson Contreras is, as much as I like him, he is not somebody who you look at and say, oh, there's no way you could possibly live without Wilson Contreras. You know, I mean, you have to have a pitching staff, which looking forward in the future right now is going to be extremely thin starting next year. And so, yeah, I don't know who the untouchable is on the Cubs. Maybe Baez. Like, I'd really have to think about that in terms of going after a top of the rotation pitcher. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of untouchable right now on the Cubs. You would you trade Wilson?
I don't know what I think. I was going to bring up the same names we talked about with the White Sox, since they apparently are worth conversing about. Lance Lynn, Dylan Bundy, are those worth your catcher?
No.
Would you feel
maybe
better?
Bundy?
Let me ask you this. Would you feel better about either of those guys than relying on Jose Quintana if you're looking for to become a playoff team?
Yeah, Lance Lynn I'm not so sure about. Like, I don't know what – like, he's obviously good still. I just don't know, like, age-wise, is he – do you get a lot of him in the future, or how much – how long you keep him around? Same thing with Bundy. How old is Dylan Bundy?
I thought Dylan Bundy was – dang it. I took it away. I thought he was 27.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Dylan Bundy – Lance Lynn to
yeah,
the
he's
Cubs
20,
for Will.
27. He'll be 28 in November.
And Lynn's got to be in his early 30s, right, by now. Like old school Lance Lynn with the Cardinals, and absolutely. No, not Lance Lynn for Wilson Contreras. Nope, wouldn't do it.
Yeah, Lance Lynn will be 34 next year. You got
30. Yeah, wouldn't do it. I mean, I don't think he's good enough now, nor do I think there's, you know, the future necessarily.
He's got a war. His war is 2.0, which is higher than Dylan Bundy's. Dylan Bundy's
okay.
1.2. We're dealing
but
with.
Wouldn't you rather? But even that said, wouldn't you rather have Dylan Bundy than Lance?
Yeah, I know. I'm just reluctant to trade one of my one of the Divas' secret boyfriends.
Ooh, yeah. We don't want to upset the Diva. But no, I would not trade Wilson. That should tell you. I would not trade Wilson Contreras for Lance Lynn. Wouldn't do it. Mm-mm.
So before we go, I want to get your thoughts on what. Jason Hayward sitting out and the Cubs and telling the Cubs players to play, and they did play. They followed what he wanted. So what did you think of that? Because we've seen strong thoughts, big thoughts or loud thoughts on both sides of like, well, the Cubs shouldn't have played. Look at the Dodgers, they backed up Mookie Betts, but other people said this is what Jason Hayward wanted, so they were listening to him. And that's what they did with what a leader wanted them to do. What did you think?
My thoughts on that were, and I wasn't there, so this is just my opinion, but my thoughts were, is that really what Jason Hayward wanted? Is that what, that's what he said? Was that really what he wanted? Like, I think that maybe that's Jason Hayward saying, like, not, like, being a good guy, and you guys get out there and play, that's cool, but I think maybe when he walks away from that meeting, he's thinking in the back of his mind, God, I kind of hope these guys rally around the family and say we're not going to play. So I wonder if that is indeed what Jason Hayward really wanted, because I got a feeling if the Cubs hadn't played, Jason Hayward would have been really touched.
Okay. All right. Before we go,
what
I did not want to. I don't think he's passive aggressive. I think he said what he said. He meant what he meant, and that's the way he is. And times I've talked to him, times I've heard him, that's what I thought. And I just think he was that way. He wanted them to play. He had to do it for himself. He needed time to think. Nobody's ever been through this. He did what his gut told him about himself and what his gut told him about his teammates. He knew his teammates had his back, and he has his teammates' back. I don't think he's setting them up to look bad, and I don't think they'd set him up to look bad either.
No, I don't mean to say he was being passive aggressive. I just I think he meant it, but I just think in a separate scenario, I think he equally would have been touched if they had, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he was mad. I can't believe they went out there. But if his team had done that, I think it probably would have really been a meaningful moment for him. That said, it's such a, you know, in the midst of it, it is real time, fluid, hard to know what the right thing is to do. So I'm not mad at anybody. So, and by the way, Nick Madrigal just muscled a single into right field to tie the game for the White. Doing Nick Madrigal things, maximum effort, Nick, with a single to tie the game in the third inning. There you go.
Hey, before we go, I usually do this during What Are You Doing, Wegner, but I neglected to ask about the podcast that Mark Rohde does. Let me put a list together.
Yeah, we are getting ready. Brian Mitchell and I getting ready to start season two, and we are going to do it in unique style. The first one will be a list about us. Brian decided that we should both do a list about ourselves, revealing five things that you might not have known about us. So it is about us in the season premiere of Let Me Put
excellent.
A List Together.
That's a hell of a list here. So is it things, or is like five words that describe you and here's why, or how you guys
No, it's like things. Like things that we've gone through in our lives that maybe you didn't know about us, whether they're good or bad or indifferent. So we're gonna reveal things, and we allow people to get on our Twitter page or Facebook page and ask us anything about us, like ask us anything that we might read on our podcast as well. So thank you, Steve.
Sure, yeah. I usually include it in there, and season two is upon us. Look how things are just creeping up, like the trading deadline.
Right.
All right. We need to say goodbye. Cub baseball is next. Yu Darvish. I don't know. Let's call it a must win, because that's what we do in sports talk radio. He must win against Trevor Bauer and the Reds. And we will be back next week with more Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate. With the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever, you can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, 1H 2025 compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.